They struggle to actually find young people to do work, and of course housing is a problem and healthcare is a problem. As you was mentioned earlier, the hospital here gets closed quite frequently. Nothing to do with vaccinations, I don't believe. It's a doctor issue. It's more a shortage of doctors. So what do you do in the meantime? I mean, you've got lots of plans for building houses, etc., but in the sort of immediate spectrum, what do you do to...
Doctors? Trudeau hasn't been able to put any new doctors out there. We got lots of doctors. We got so many doctors you don't even know. We don't have people who are trained as doctors, but we've got doctors. We got people who say they're doctors. Just say you're a doctor when you get here. 60 days later, we'll get you working in the hospital. How about them apples?
Okay, and I mean, that obviously, you're going to encounter some opposition from the College of Medicine, etc.
Trudeau's got all these doctors here. Nobody's working as doctors. We don't have any doctors. Everybody says they got no doctors. People are lining up to get doctors. There's no doctors. We got lots of doctors. We just need to make people who aren't doctors, doctors. This country's full of doctors. There's no shortage of doctors. We're just short of people who are trained to be doctors. But we got lots of doctors. We're just going to make everybody doctors. Everybody can be a doctor. You want to be a doctor? Take the test. You just take the test. Everybody can be doctors. You want to be a doctor?
Okay. On the topic, I mean, in terms of your sort of strategy currently, you're obviously taking the populist pathway.
Who said that?
Well, appealing to people's more emotional levels, I would guess.
Give me an example.
Certainly you tap very strong ideological language quite frequently.
What's that?
Left wing, you know, this and that, right wing, you know, I mean, it's...
Who asked you to write these questions? Who do you even work for here?
Okay. A lot of people would say that you're simply taking a page out of the Donald Trump...
I never said that either. That's not how I talk.
Well, I'm sure a great many Canadians, but...
I never said that.
I don't know who, but...
I don't even believe in all that. Don't interrupt me.
Why should Canadians trust you with their vote, given, you know, not just the sort of ideological inclination in terms of taking the page of Donald Trump's book, but...
We're going to make sure that inflation comes down. Interest rates come down. What we're going to do is... We're gonna clean up the streets.
Okay, TK.
Ooh, it's cold out there.
It's so cold out there. What are you talking about? The market? Is it dead?
There's just not a lot of people out there right now. You know, you put up a great listing. You're like, man, I got it priced right. It looks good.
Yeah.
This is going to fly off the shelves.
Who says you have it priced right?
Where's all the people?
Where's all the
Ooh,
people?
Good question, Daryl. Good question. Who does say? Because it's not up to me, that's for sure. It's up for the buyers to tell me if I priced it right or not.
The buyers decide. Right.
The buyers decide. They tell you. They tell you fast too. They don't hesitate, you know. They don't mess around and be like, "Hey, I'll get back to you next week." They're just like, "We don't want to come and see it." Yeah. And so that's more than enough of a message that we need to take.
Yeah, my daughter was doing an open house and I was like, "How many people were there?" And she said, "I don't know, maybe 5." Then she counted and then she was like, "No, it was 4." Yeah. And I was like, "Was that like busy? Was that good?" And she goes, "I don't know. Like, it was my first one, right? It seemed pretty busy to me."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I'm pretty sure if you can remember all of the buying groups that came into your open house, it was probably not so great."
Yeah. That's good though, that you get to get in front of people and to talk to people and, you know, be real estatey.
Yeah. Well, I think
real estatey is the secret of selling more real estate. Like, everyone always asked me, you know, like, how do you sell real estate? How do you, you know, continue to sell real estate after years and all that kind of stuff? And really the answer is just to be doing real estate full time.
Just do it.
It's really not a complicated thing. But if you start working another job and you know, you're sitting at home and you're not really talking to people about real estate, the odds of you selling real estate is pretty low. It's pretty low.
Definitely lower.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But if you're out there, you're out there, you're meeting the people, you're doing real estate stuff.
I got to think from this younger perspective, like everything looks really stupid the way that things are done, you know? I was going to say, get that thing in the right spot there.
It's
now
just too
it
itchy
looks
now.
Normal.
It's just too itchy in that nose there.
Oh. Yeah, because now it's in the right spot. It's supposed to overhang.
And yours
a
is
bit.
Probably, you know, natural hair. Like that looks like that was that you they scraped little... that off a dead guy's body and stuck it on your face.
This is from like a horse.
Mine was
or
manufactured
something.
Down somewhere on Lakeshore.
This thing's from a horse's hide.
Yeah.
Anyways, TK, what the hell were we talking about? Yeah. So listen, from a young person's perspective, like the open house and how it works, actually all of real estate and how it works, I think it's a great time to be coming into this profession with kind of new, fresh eyes, because all these lawsuits right now and all these people getting canceled just for talking on social media, like
good little wake up call, like well, going into it, right? It's kind of just like, oh, all right. Like I better start, you know, making sure that I'm not a jerk.
Oh, wait. All right. What? Like, comment, subscribe, ring the bell. There's a bell, isn't there? Yeah.
That's it. There you go. Perfect.
Perfect. That's all we needed.
Please subscribe. And
well, ooh-wee.
Well, and maybe focus on life real estate and
get a t-shirt.
Maybe servicing the clients.
Helping the clients,
you know?
Actually achieve their goals. I mean, it's groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking.
Yeah, I remember definitely... when Frank got a call from somebody in the States and the guy said, oh, what's your secret? I can't believe that, like, you know, what you've been able to do so well and da 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 da. And he was like, care about the clients.
Yeah.
And the guy's bullshit. Like, whoa, that's so profound. It was like, that was like, he wasn't expecting that, you know?
Sure. Well, he was expecting something about, you know, all that money he injects into marketing, probably.
Well, he was probably thinking like, you know, show up at their house right before dinner so that they can't say no to sign the contract.
Right. There's
like,
a
that's
trick.
That's what agents want.
Right.
They
a
want
trick.
Like some magic pill, yeah. You know?
Take your kid to the, yeah. Like you
join,
do, right?
Yeah.
Before Wonderland.
Put your kids in private school and then, you know, have them play hockey and sponsor the team and you will be successful.
Sponsoring the arena is a good trick. That always works really well, right?
But really, it was just caring about people.
Caring about folks. People.
Not the advice you wanted to hear. Everyone looks for the magic pill. Investments. I was just off on the phone with a client of mine who's trying to make money in Bitcoin and he's trading Bitcoin. And I told him the same thing. And this is a very experienced guy. Owns buildings, owns properties, that develops properties, and he's still caught in this Bitcoin thing, you know, trading Bitcoin. And I said, there's no secret pill, you know,
to trading Bitcoin.
No, there's no secret anything to do anything fast. Everything is the same answer from anybody who's been around long enough will tell you, you know, focus on one thing, become an expert, put your efforts into it, learn everything you need to know about it, lower your expectations, don't be greedy. And, you know, you'll be a overnight success after 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After 30 years,
you'll be
an
overnight
rocking
success.
Things.
You'll be absolutely where you want to be. But anything sooner
you're
than
lucky.
That, get ready for the ride.
Well,
can we get our guest on, Daryl?
Yeah, talk about experience. I mean, this guy's the top of the top, I think. Have you ever worked with somebody as great as this guy? As knowledgeable?
I've worked with this guy. So, I mean, I've worked with the greatest.
The greatest of all time.
The greatest of all times.
Very exciting. Every time he joins us.
The GOAT. I actually got a question that's very specific to something for him, too.
I'll bet you do. Oh, good. Yeah. Good. He's got the Movember mustache built in.
The background on the guy.
Yeah, where's some light? You got a light in there?
It looks good. What do you mean? Look at the contrast.
No, it's like Max Headroom. This is AI version of Greg Ewens. This is how you guys are figuring out how to keep up with all the work everybody's throwing at you, right?
This is my secondary meeting spot because AI. My wife's upstairs doing a meeting. And so like, she's working. So yeah, this is where I do public meetings because it looks like I'm in a nondescript void. And for whatever reason, it plays well with the committee.
I like it. I like it.
The mustaches
like,
are nice.
Curious.
Nolan. It looks like the Nolan Matthias kind of whole setup there. This guy's. Anyways, Mr. Greg, what's going on?
No issues.
How you doing?
I'm good.
You good?
Yeah. Yeah, things are busy. I'm getting towards the end of the year. Things are good, though.
I think yeah, no it's complaints. Last time you were on the show where you were with Bittori, right? But it was very early in the process. I remember the first time you were on the show, you worked at the city still, right? You were on yeah. that side. And then so now it's been like a year and a half, I guess, since then.
Yeah, it was September when I jumped over to Bittori on the private like a sector. Year. So yeah, it hasn't even been yeah. that long. It's been a
wow.
quite the journey. Yeah, quite the journey we've been on with you, Greg. You know, from yeah. the end of the city planning days to going private.
I'm still a city planner. You know, I'm still doing that. It's just I'm on the other side of the table.
You're on the other side of the table. The same so, people. So, yeah. so how long in that 12-month span did it take you to realize that, you know, maybe things don't work as well as they could on that other side of the table?
Oh, I mean, like that, this is the thing. I think everybody knows that regardless of what side you're on, I think there's always room for improvement. Like Toronto is a giant bureaucracy. It's sort of a lumbering dinosaur of policy and requirements and things that take a long time to change. And you're seeing right now, like people have a hard time with that. Like look what they just did in Vancouver, you know, where
yes.
they're like, all right, we're going to do something that frankly, the Ontario government could have done a long time ago.
Should have done.
I'm just diving right into planning policy, but
hold on a sec. No, let's back up a sec. What yeah, did Vancouver do? Yeah. Like let's give everybody a little background in case they're not right up to speed on everything at the exact moment it happens.
Oh, you mean all your listeners, viewers aren't looking at, you know, planning policy updates from across the country.
I'm sure a couple happens? Of them no. are.
So in BC, the provincial government enacted a legislation to basically increase development rights around various types of transit stations. Depending on how close you are to the transit station, it's higher density and taller height. And then as it kind of cascades outward, 500, 800, 1,000 meters from those stations. I think that's the those are the details anyway.
Blanketed though. Like they don't care yeah. the current oh, yeah. use, right? The current use well, doesn't no. matter.
And this is the thing I think Toronto's had a hard time with for a long time. Like we have these areas that are, you know, everybody was ripping on the yellow belt for years. And now there's been some traction in changing that. But what this policy did is in Vancouver anyway, is take those low rise residential areas and it's going to allow for people to build, you know, 4 or 6 or 8 story or even taller buildings in some cases, depending on where you're located. And that's great. That's what we should be doing because they want to encourage people to drive less, to use transit more, to, you know, utilize the city's investment in transportation. And, you know, the fewer roads you have on the cars, the better it is for everybody else who has no choice but to drive.
Does this mean that if I own a house somewhere in that zone that I can just throw up an 8-story building on my property?
Well, there's always, you know, conditions and criteria around these things.
But
you know, it's moving in a direction that is far less restrictive than it would have been to date because
far less restrictive. Yes.
Like, and even in Toronto, like there's, you know, I know the context here a lot better than I know how things work in Vancouver because we don't really do any work out there. But Toronto has these things called major transit station areas, and there's a bunch of them all over the city. And they were originally thought up, well, they were put in policy in 2019 by the province when they updated the growth plan. And what that did is very similar to what Vancouver just did, where it required cities to look at areas between 500 to 800 meters from major transit stations, so subway stations, GO stations, other types of transit stations, and increase density by an amount that reflects a transit supportive amount of density in an area to grow in those areas. And Toronto went and did that to a point, but because it's a provincial, because of the way this works, the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing had to approve those policy amendments. So while the province could have just come in and changed the policy at the city the way that they did out in British Columbia, the Ontario government didn't do that. They put in this policy and said, cities, you figure it out and then send it to us and we'll tell you if we want to change anything or not. And that's the part of the process we're at. And it's been stalled there for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're a little, you know, Toronto, busy with other things, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, and what I can't quite figure out is when they walked back the Greenbelt stuff and said, okay, and the boundary expansion stuff, and they said, okay, we don't want to grow. Maybe we don't want to grow outward so much. Maybe we don't want to pave over lands that aren't in the urban area right now and grow. Maybe we want to grow inside the cities. Well, the corresponding move you do is you release the major transit station area policies and you allow people to do effectively what they're doing in British Columbia right now. I don't know why they're sitting on these things. I don't know why they're holding on to them, whether it's for some kind of well-timed political capital move. I don't know, but it would make a huge difference in the city.
And I feel like that's one of the first things you and I were talking about back in September, is that this thing was coming out and here we go, right? Grab a property. Let's
already changed. It's already changed people's kind of perspective on how they approach sites in Toronto.
For sure. Yeah.
Like, especially you, right?
100% the site, me, yeah.
You know, the you're looking, you got a site that you're working on right now in a PMTSA. We're working on it in a PMTSA. Yeah. We are. And I don't think that we would be at the point we're at right now were it not for that policy change. And the city looking at it and saying, okay, this is different than it used to be. We have to deliver housing in these kind of areas, and this makes sense. And I don't know if you've talked about that one at length on the show. I think I've heard you talk about it a couple of times, but I mean, that's
it's a great example, of like how the planning side is loosening up with regard to proposals and trying to look like they're speeding up the proposal process.
Oh, hey, we're going through it right now. And I think, like, we submitted an application, zoning application, to change around a building that was, the building was approved, but we added a bunch more units. You know, we changed around sort of the building envelope. We had to go through a zoning amendment to do it. We reduced the parking from like 130 spaces down to 4, did some other stuff. And it's in the downtown.
Yeah.
And we submitted that application on September 17th. Like this past September, just like, you know, 2 months ago. And I'm going to Toronto Community Council next week with a supportive report where they're going to approve the zoning and send it to council. So we're going to have zoning in place on that property before the new year. Right. It's a crazy turnaround. That was unheard of.
Crazy turnaround. You know?
Is anybody putting applications on that, the major street framework that you said that was just released recently?
The six story, 30 unit thing?
Like, are people taking advantage of that already? Do you have any clients or examples?
Yeah, people started even before the city announced it. Yeah. So what the city announced at the end of September is they're updating the planning permissions along major streets in the city's neighborhoods to allow, like you said, for up to six-story apartments with around 30 units or townhouses, four-story townhouses. So the reason that's significant is because up until now, if you were in an area on a major street, say Dufferin, north of the subway station, you know, all those houses, you get a couple of lots north of the subway station there. Those are all within a neighborhood designation. So that was capped at 4 stories and you couldn't do anything there that didn't.
Which, you know, subway station are you talking about?
Like Dufferin and Bloor. Sorry.
Oh, Dufferin and Bloor. Okay.
Yeah. Like that area, really? Area where there's lots going on. You got the mall to the south, you got
that
mall to the north.
Oh yeah, north, all those houses, that thing, yeah, like that, like for years those things should have been 30 stories right there.
Well, right around the intersection, yeah, but as you get further up,
wasn't that Anna was that district, didn't she try and get something pushed through years ago? I remember something about that. I looked at all those.
She was always involved in the housing stuff when she was there. I worked with her a lot on the laneway suite stuff. And she was really involved in the expanding housing option stuff, which was the origin of this major street change. So long and short of it is, there's a bunch of places in the city where you could only really build a low rise house in some form up until, you know, and this isn't even passed yet. But the city put out a draft policy that said, all right, going forward, you can consolidate lots, you could build 30 unit, six story apartments, you can build townhouses. And that is a big shift from where they were at. So we have a few projects. I've got two on Islington. I've got one out on Ellesmere. We've got, there's a couple of them I'm forgetting, different parts of the process. One on Christie. Anyway,
describe those lots though, just so people can understand what that lot would look like. It's two residential lots put together. It's a vacant land. It's a commercial building. What is it?
I mean, the one on Islington we're working on is just a corner lot. It's a corner residential lot with a detached house on it on Islington. And we're putting
going sideways, right? Like it's on the side street.
So it's deeper. That's on the side
street. That's the one you want. Those, right?
So we're doing a and we're kind of in the short.
How wide
of
is
the
lot
right now?
How wide is it, and how deep?
Oh, you're asking me the stuff that I don't know off the top of my head.
Because they were very specific,
50
right?
by 130 or something like that.
That would
Is
that good for the policy?
Well, it ultimately comes down to building design and how you're able to situate your units, because you've got some setbacks on either side you need to account for, and you've got your height. But there's none of that stepping stuff that you would see on six-story buildings in other instances. So we're doing a box.
That's not going to happen anymore.
Just a straight
rectangles
up box
everywhere. That's what we were talking about a few weeks ago. Is this is what we need? Unfortunately, we need a slathering of ugly, quick architecture all over the place.
But
right?
It doesn't even have to be ugly, though. Like, it's like simple is good.
It does,
you know?
But it doesn't. We're not getting twisty things from Mississauga, you know? We're not getting the one, if that's ever finished, right? We're going to get rectangles, six-story rectangles everywhere, because this is fantastic, especially if you own one already. If you own on a main street a house that's going lengthwise, you know, you're on the corner there, give me a call, man.
What if your address is like, you know, the side streets address, but you are on the main, the major streets corner?
If you've got frontage on a major street, then it's fine.
That's still good.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The whole intent is that if you're on that street, then
what if
you're good?
Your backyard is on that street. Can you flip them around? I think I saw that use in there.
Yeah. So there's, which is really cool, because you've got out in Scarborough, you've got a lot of these backlotted subdivisions with super deep lots that back onto like McCowan, right?
Yeah.
And you drive down
McCowan
and it's just these big grass boulevards with board fences as people's backyards on either side. And now there's an opportunity where you can consolidate a couple of those and put up a bigger building.
What about if they're like up on, like the grade is up higher, but they back onto a main street?
You'd have to look at it on a case by case basis. I think my sense is that the city wants to see these because they're recommending it. So, you know, they'll work with you. And that's kind of why it's good to reach out to people who know what they're doing with this stuff and can give you some advice about how to approach the city.
Yeah. And it seems like such a, like, there's so many of these, like, it's almost just like, we can have a housing crisis solved within 10 years if everyone just decides to do what is necessary on these lots. We know we're not going to do it. We know that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's still like
none of them are for sale. So
What a policy. Like what a policy. I think that's
it could help.
Game changer.
Yeah, it could be very helpful. But this is the thing.
That's the challenge.
You got to build them. Sure. And you got to make them affordable.
Just make
like
a factory that makes 6-story buildings. Put it in like, you know, Bradford or somewhere not too far. And then you can just have buildings being made, manufactured, and we just assemble them on these properties and everyone just gets the same building. That way they look nice. Simple.
Yeah. I'm working with
a lot of business
logical
ideas today on the show.
But
I'm
this
working
is
with a group right now that's doing that with fourplexes effectively. They're doing they have a couple of designs that fit on standard Toronto lots. They have, you know, pre-manufactured parts. It's like, they don't have to redesign the building every time. You know, it's not one-off construction every time.
That works out perfectly, right? Because every lot is so similar and all the conditions are the same and bullshit.
Well,
everybody has that plan. It doesn't work in reality. They work on some lots, a lot of lots maybe, but not all lots.
And you'll never get it to work on all lots. Well,
every application. Yeah. Your grade's different.
Well, when I did the laneway suite stuff like years ago, one of the criticisms we got from, residents was, you know, we don't want these to go to the committee of adjustment. Like if you zone it, then people should just deal with the permissions and that's it. And I was like, no, that's not how anything works. You know, there's a reason you can go to the committee and it's deal with, you know, exceptional circumstances. And so people have been doing that. And, you know, we've taken some laneway suites to the committee as well and had, mixed success. I lost the first laneway suite committee of adjustment file that I brought to the city after leaving Toronto. And I was really kind of
don't put that on your resume.
No, well, I just won the TLAB hearing to get it approved.
Okay.
So they're going to build it anyway.
Look at this process you got to go through. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, no, it is. It's actually kind of, it was a bad decision. I think the committee made, they weren't in the right frame of mind to give me the time of day.
What were you trying to do though? What was the issue?
It was one of those lots on Davenport you know, by Casa Loma there, and the grade change from Davenport up to the lane.
That's where I'm talking about. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly where I'm thinking.
Yeah, so they have a really cool fourplex at the front, and they wanted to put they already had that built for the most part, and they wanted to put a laneway suite at the back. And since the fourplex was already built and there wasn't a ton of space in the backyard, the separation distance was less than, and the building looked taller as well, because on the lane, it looked like a two-story, on the lane, it looked like a two-story laneway suite, totally fine. But then when you look from the other side, it's a three-story structure,
right?
And with a walkout basement, effectively. And so people, the committee, they didn't like that. So
they didn't like
the OLT did. So
why is that any of their fucking,
or the T-Lab, rather?
So crazy. So crazy that this is somebody else's business when there's a piece of paper that says you can do this. It's your property, technically, right? According to the rules. And then still, you have to go beg, and then they say no. And then, well, if you only spend a bit more time and a lot more money, we'll let this go. We'll let you do it.
I have a question about another project that you were working on. So Mervish Village, right? Yeah. West Bank has got a little bit of fire thrown at them recently about, you know, their
finances,
their books and their finances. Right. We had another receiver.
So they say. Yeah.
We had another receiver go under receivership, Van Dyke. I don't know them as well, but they were doing Grand Central Mimico, which I heard of.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a file right on the other side of the rail corridor. So I've been keeping an eye on that one. It's interesting.
What are you hearing in the chatter about Mervish Village? I mean, this is like your baby here, Greg. What's going on?
We need to find
a solution here.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of removed from all that. Like I haven't, like any of the people that I worked with for the most part that were on Mervish, like on that side, I don't think they're there anymore. I don't think they're at West Bank. So I have no inside track on what's going on. I'm just kind of watching and hoping they finish it off. Because what a shame that would be.
God,
it could be a very cool development. I have confidence that it'll get finished.
It'll get finished.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The buildings stay, but the owners don't.
Yeah, it's mostly up, right? There's a bunch of the, I don't know what they're like inside. But I went and toured the thing when it was, when they topped off the tallest building, but they hadn't put any of the walls on yet. And that was wild because all the tower floor plates, like the actual floor area of each floor, they're far smaller than just about anything else that gets built in Toronto. They're all 500 square meters, where most of Toronto's are 700 or 800 square meters.
Wow.
So you're standing there, and because they could fit five towers on the site that way, as opposed to four. And and you know, all the units are, you know, a little shallower and more window coverage, I guess. I don't know. The design was cool. So it would be a shame if that stalls for a significant amount of time, because I'm looking.
There's only so many projects that we can have like go defunct at the same time, you know. Like, there's only so many people who are going to be able to come in and take over and do what's necessary to get these things done, right?
Are you a real estate agent and you're looking to make a change anywhere in Ontario? Guess what? We're hiring. Franklin Associates, number one team in the GTA for all RE/MAX teams, number one team for all teams from all companies for number of units sold throughout Toronto. So if you're looking to make a change, best decision I ever made was to join Franklin Associates. Go to jointeamleo.com and we can set up a call.
Hey, is it just me or is it getting crazy here? Huh?
Well, it's interesting. I got two or three calls in the past week from people who are looking at sites that are under a bit of distress, and they're able to tie them up for a significant period of time conditionally, and they want to get us to go through a process just to see if the city's going to support what they want to do on the site or not. And if they get a good feeling, then they'll probably close. And if they don't, they'll walk.
Are these zoned sites? Are these already zoned, or they're not zoned yet?
No, they're some of them are at various stages of the process.
Like how many rezonings
to develop?
Sorry, how many rezonings are you seeing? Because I see like this big crater in the market happening where all these guys that got, you know, 15 stories are now going back in for 25 or 30 or something crazy. Like,
yeah.
All this stuff that's supposed to come on the market is just staying in the application process because things have changed so drastically now. Like, how many people are coming to you to go, hey, like, do you think we could get another 15 stories now?
Well, I think a lot of people are thinking that, whether it's to kind of, you know, add a bit more, you know, value to the project, or because they're in an area, like they're in an MTSA where they might have got their approvals 4 or 5 years ago, and they're like, well, everybody else is coming in 10 stories higher than me, so I'm going to increase can do, right?
Yeah.
And so we get a few calls about that for sure. I think a lot of people are thinking of it. And you see it too. Like, people will go to the committee of adjustment and they'll request this stuff, you know, whether it's 3, 4, 5, 6 floors. And a bunch of people have been successful with it. I think the one got
80 you know, 10 at first.
Floors.
Yeah.
No, yeah. They got a bunch. Yeah. So they went 12. That route as well.
Yeah,
those guys are going to have to go to 120 to be able to make sense of that place.
But it's one thing when you do it, like the one did it during construction, right? And they had planned to do it because they must have planned that the structure could hold another God knows how many floors just in case, you know, it worked there.
I sure hope they did. Yeah.
We'll see, I guess, one day, right? But one day we'll see. But the reality is that a lot of them, they're zoned or very close to zoned, and it's been 3-4 years since the process started, and now all this new stuff has come up and they're like, okay, well, fuck, I'm not gonna stay at 20 even though this looks great at 20. If I know it'll take me one more year and I'm gonna go from 20 to, like, these are some crazy jumps we're seeing on a lot of these sites, right?
Yeah.
If I'm going from 20 to 30, I mean, imagine if my performa worked at 20, what the hell the numbers look like if I can add another 10 stores, right?
That's what people are thinking. But I think it's kind of a continuation of really what happened over the past 10 or so years was values were rising and rising that, you know, if your project got delayed a year, you'd probably come out better on the other side anyway, because all of a sudden you're selling the units for that much more. Like, I watched a lot of sites go through the process and it took a while and people complained, oh, it's taken forever and all that. But it, you know, once you're actually out there selling the units, you're probably selling them for a much higher price per square foot than you would be if you got through the process as fast as possible. And not saying we should slow stuff down, but I think now that isn't happening. You know, you don't have rising values papering over mistakes and delays. So people are resorting to asking for more floor space to help shore up budgets. And so it's
right.
It makes faster sense. And faster process times. Yeah. There was also something the province was talking about too, about like maybe reviewing employment lands and different things in the province. And they were talking about that recently. And some people are concerned about, you know, if the province starts to, I don't know, get excited and starts to allow for more residential development, that's going to hurt us. What's that all about?
Yeah, they were looking at that. I think just everything that's happened over the past couple of months, they'll probably back away from that. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. And it just goes back to, like, just release the PMTSAs, you know, release the major transit station area policies, do the work you want to do in terms of housing creation there. Like, if you legitimately want to create an environment where people can build a ton of houses and not have to go through an arduous process, then add the as of right permissions the way BC just did to Ontario transit stations. Yeah. The template's there. You've
Give
done
us the
it.
Rules.
The city's done it. Like,
BC does things first and then we follow usually. So that would be something that I would look forward to.
We didn't have to in this case. We could have been first to it, and we weren't. So, like, the city got their part of the equation done back in 2022, and the province has been sitting on it since. So, like, I don't see a reason for them to open up employment areas or even expand urban boundaries.
What about all these employment areas that are, like, right beside new subway stations? It's like, what the fuck? Like, is it Jane and Finch or Finch and Keel? Somewhere in Finch, it's all employment around it, and you got a brand new subway station there, and nobody can live near it, and there's not too many people that, like, can work in that area. So, why not? Like, what...
Well, that needs to change, though, obviously, whatever the building, whoever owns the buildings. I mean, vacancy is super low right now. Like, I imagine they're being used, but over time, they'll be used better.
But they can't be used more than their capacity, right? Like, they're just employment. Like,
people need to get to work, so you got to take a subway to somewhere. So
you get to take a bus to work. You get to live. Yeah, you gotta have... If you're going to put all this money...
downtown, right? They got to go to their, like, you know, blue-collar job.
Yeah, you got to go to a different employment area, further away on a GO train now, because people got to live closer.
Work from home.
Work from home.
Yeah,
yeah, that's it. You know,
what about?
You're making all the right points. Like the thing is, those lands go away, if all of a sudden you introduce residential onto those employment lands, then they're never going to be employment again. You're never like, who knows what happens in 20 or 30 years? Like once you get rid of those employment lands, they're toast. And once you introduce employment or residential uses into employment lands, then it has an impact on the surrounding uses, because if anybody has like a noxious use or there's noise or odor or dust, generally the obligation to mitigate towards the sensitive use, which is the residential use, is on the emitter. So if you put a condo up next to a slaughterhouse, all of a sudden you've cost the slaughterhouse a whole pile of money. Mm-hmm. And like a good example of that is down on Wellington Street in Toronto, just around Niagara, the Niagara neighborhood. There's a works yard there. And it was by the railway, and you know, nobody lived there except for the subdivision, you know, the older houses on Niagara there. But there was a works yard and it operated and it was fine. And then west of Stanley Park, there was a couple of condos that got built, you know, 12-story, 15-story condos in the 2000s. And because of the noise from the works yard, the city had to put up these huge acoustic barriers. So the city had to spend a bunch of money mitigating noise from, you know, that use from the source, mm-hmm. because the new residential buildings were up. And the you know, similar thing happened with the slaughterhouse that was right next to it as well, which ultimately closed. That was a crazy building. Speaking of really interesting projects, the thing TAS is doing down there, that's going to be great when it's done. But that's one of the issues with employment land. So once you start the intrusion of residential uses, then it sort of has ripple effects to everything else, and people aren't able to use those adjacent employment areas for certain types of uses. So you're sort of diminishing the ability of them to serve the city's economic function.
If you give us the as of right increase across the board and you give us something like to follow, then we don't need those employment lands. Like, we can figure stuff out within the boundaries that you give us. But like, I've been saying since day one, like, just give me a playbook that everybody's going to play by. Okay. It sets the land value for the seller. It sets the land value for the buyer. Everybody knows the deal. It's like, this is what this is. Done. Let's all move on. But instead, it's like this crazy guessing game and like all this misinformation about the values and what can be here. And everybody's like, I think I could do this. And okay, well, can I convince everybody else that it, like, does everybody agree with me? No, they don't. Okay, well, now, fuck, they didn't agree with that. Now I got to do this. Does this work? No, this doesn't work. Okay, the deal's dead now, right? Yeah. Or like, well, it's a ridiculous process. And how much money do people spend to just figure out if something is maybe viable? You know, because we don't, how do you even know what rules to follow? You got like the rules that are written, you got all these things that they've put out there that aren't really in law that they kind of enforce some of the time, depending on who you're dealing with, right? It's like, of course, we're never going to get anything. But like, who can't figure out really easily that it's like, here's the rules, go play by the rules. And no, we're not going to like let you play outside of the rules. But if you're willing to stay inside the rules, it's going to be like really fast.
Well, I think that's where they're headed. But there's always people who want to push a little further. Like if you say, oh, yeah, 6 stories on major streets, go do that. You've created a lot of value and a lot of housing opportunity across the city. But you've also created a circumstance where people are going to say, well, I want to do 8. I think there's a reason for me to do 8 here. And maybe that's totally justified, right? And so that's why you've got the planning process. But if you can, I agree with you to the point where if you can open up more opportunity, if there's a greater spectrum of stuff you can do through a really quick process, then that's ultimately a benefit.
But what if everybody agreed?
I'm on the other side though. When everybody agreed, you can only do 8. Too much, you know, freedom, because there's been eras where they were allowing that, and you get a bunch of ugly buildings from people who shouldn't be doing it, and you get a bunch of things that don't make sense. And there's plenty of cities that have examples. And Greg, I'm sure in school they teach you all that. That's the whole point of being a planner, is, you know, to make sure that at the end of the day, for the next 100 years, everyone's going to look and go, yeah, that makes sense, you know.
Yeah,
and so there are like places that just don't fall into that.
If you took pictures of society now, you'd think architecture included tents. This is part of the problem. So like, do we want this period to be defined by boring buildings with
tents
people in them?
Our grandkids will never know they existed.
Oh, Okay.
I'm just saying that there has to be some limitations. This is the other side of the argument that, you know, you don't want to hear, but it's the reality is that you can't just give everybody the ability to be able to do, you know, within a certain framework on any certain property, because there's going to be certain situations where, like the Davenport one, you know, maybe in that case, that property would have been too, like it would have stood out too much because of the hill. Like you have to really look at all each property individually in order
that's
to
the beauty make of things. The decision.
Yeah.
It's as somebody who wrote the, like I put together the laneway suite bylaw, right, with the team we were working with on that. And we tried to make it work as best as possible on all the lots where it could, you know, be applied. But you can't, it's never, you're never going to do it where it works 100% of the time. You just can't. And that's where you have that process where the marginal, you know, examples have to be looked at a little bit closer, and maybe they present other opportunities. I think it's always going to be the case. But if you just, if you make it easier and you provide people with more opportunities within the spectrum of what is as of right, and you, the carrot is the process is going to be really quick. You can just go in and get a building permit, then people are going to do it. And we've seen that and we'll continue to. And I think, you know, the point of whether the buildings look nice or not, I think is sort of subjective. Like I, you know, people talk about the, you know, the Daniel Liebskin crystal at the ROM all the time. And I love that building. It looks ridiculous. I like it. Some people think it's absurd. So, you know, I like that kind of stuff. I think the city needs just as much of that, because I think if you have an equal amount of people that actually can't stand a building, and otherwise really love it, then you actually have a really interesting building. There's right. a ton of buildings in the city that are just like, meh. You know, the spectrum of people's opinions is quite narrow.
If there's an art, right? If there's a subjective artistic point. But I'm talking about some guy who owns a lot on the corner of Islington and the Westway. And he's just like, hey, you know what? I'm doing a 6-story building. He's got the money to be able to develop it himself, have no experience whatsoever, and he's just a loose cannon. And in the end, we just drive by that building every single, you know, weekend, and you're just going like, man, who let that guy build that building? There needs to be some restraint. There's a lot of crazy people out there, guys. Come on.
Yes, and then, you know, this process is for that, but the province took away the city's ability to regulate a lot of aspects of a building design
and that type of stuff. Yeah,
on building, like the materials and whatnot. Like there's, the city still does that, and we still work with the city on that, but there's very limited opportunity in the Planning Act for the city to do that now. And so yeah, people could put up absurd looking buildings, and part of me hopes they do,
right,
because it doesn't happen all the time, right? And I think, you know, there's architects that are doing some really interesting stuff in Toronto, and you know, it's you know, we'll see what people do with this 6-story stuff. Ultimately, I think you create a new sort of typology. Like with laneway suites, I see them getting built now, and they all look kind of similar because they all maximize the volume that they're given. And so they got the little slant on the second floor, and they got the, you know, however they want to do the bedrooms and the living room, whether it's on the first or second floor. And then they all look kind of similar in a reasonable way. So I think you're going to see that with the 6-story buildings too.
I think by defining those side, front, back setbacks and heights in a blanket area gives people the opportunity to do whatever the hell they want. And yeah, people might be reckless and build some stupid shit, but you don't have to buy them, right? You don't have to buy something in that building. You don't have to live there. So I think the onus is still going to be on the developer to make a product that people will want to live in, especially if you make it that easy that anybody can just be a developer and get stock onto the market. Like whenever this glut that we have building up right now kind of clears itself up, we'll be behind the eight ball by a mile again, right?
Yeah, well, as far as I've heard from the city, application volume is slowing down. They're not,
it's gotta be
not as much going
down.
In.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, yeah. it was
good
supposed
timing
to be
doing a project right now, yeah.
Well, but it was supposed to be more houses quicker, and we're getting less houses slower, right? And part policy, that's what I'm saying, is like the policy to unlock all this stuff actually slowed things down because everybody that was in the process already or already just zoned just went, whoa, hang on a sec. We can like really go back and get a ton of more. And like we would, like TK said, like you'd be stupid not to try it, right? So it actually put the brakes on, plus the market's fucked. Like all these things are not pushing people towards doing more deals. And even like we talked about a couple of weeks ago that maybe people are not closing on the properties. So we don't see that land value transfer from, you know, transfer title. So we don't know about a sale, but we would know from the volume of applications in if people were moving forward on land projects and not closing. So we're seeing a slowdown in land purchases. We're seeing a slowdown in applications going in. And on top of that, we're seeing the ones that are in not speeding up, going back in for more, yeah, which is slowing things down. Right. And then, so I want to throw something in that we're dealing with right now, which is just ridiculous. Okay. Like right now, we can have a glut in the system because of a flow test. Okay. And so what everybody in the city is now going to deal with is they've closed down your ability to have a flow test between November 15th and April 15th of next year, which means no applications that don't have a flow test can be deemed complete when submitting, which is a real fuck up for anybody who's willing to even goddamn submit anything right now. Now you got to go, I could be ready to go in February, but I got to wait, and not till April 15th. I got to wait till April 15th to book my flow test. I probably have to wait, you know, to get that booked, have it done, get the report, and then add it in. So now maybe I'm lucky if by May or June I'm submitting. When I was ready in February, I could be selling in June, but I need a flow test. And so
you're really getting into the weeds now, eh?
Well, but this is like the crazy dichotomy, or is that the right word? Like,
what's the reason for the you know, the gap from November to April, why they're not doing the flow test?
Weather, it's too cold to do it or something.
So how can that be, you know, prevented?
I don't know. Why don't they just do a flow test everywhere before November? So it's just on file.
I mean, I'm not the one to ask about how those work, but they
just do it later. And
they, I mean, the city has to be part of it, right? So you got to schedule it with the city and your engineer goes out and they do it. We just got one done a couple of weeks ago for a file that we've had in for a bit. And yeah, it's, I mean, from the city's perspective, I get it. They need to know before they're approving a bunch of new units that there's servicing capacity, you know, that there's capacity for the people to, you know, turn on their tap and there's going to be water there, right?
Water is important. All,
yeah, water is
important. But if there isn't, then, like, there's no other option than to make sure that there is, right?
Well, then you get into a conversation about, you know, making sure the city is on top of infrastructure improvements, and that's costly, and that gets debated every year around budget time. And mm-hmm. you know, it's I think between November 15th and April 15th, yeah, there's going to be an issue. And I don't know, I've reached out to the city to say, hey, what's the what's going to happen here? Yeah. If we're in a situation where the city wants to be advancing so many units, or approving so many units every month to make sure they hit the timelines, the, you know, 285,000 units they have to have built by 2032, mm-hmm. then you can't have this 5-month window where stuff isn't able to be deemed complete unless, like, there's ways to approach it.
Hopefully there's ways to remedy
forward.
And yeah, the point of it is, like,
figure that out. But
it's like, it's crazy though, that we, you know, everybody's trying to put on a front that they're trying to get more housing done. And then, you know, all these crazy things come up as part of the process. And now there's, like, this new thing that you got to do all this drilling for like $40,000 before you put in an application to find, like, exactly where your services are so that the city can definitely get the trees that they were promised in the space that they were promised them. It's like, there, it's really not actually easier. It's the people in planning are definitely, like, they want it to be easier. They're like, yes, bring us this, and we're on board with that, and we're definitely wanting to get this thing done for you. But then there's, like, these little rules that are like relics from the past or new stupid ideas that infiltrate the beautiful thing trying to happen, right?
Well, it's growing pains too. It's you know, there's a process that the province put into place about, you know, 90 days, you get your zoning approved, or you give 50% of the fees back to the applicant. And that's the way it is right now. And so the cities don't want to give this money back because over, you know, for big projects especially, it's a considerable amount of money.
Flow test.
And so they've created this process that allows stuff to get through quickly if you have all the information they need. And so this is just, you know, this just started on July 1st of this year. So we're only 3 or 4 months into it. And yeah, there's all of this stuff that's like, okay, well, maybe this has to be looked at because it has to work better. And this it's iterative because it has to be. And honestly, like it was, I think people were right to be a bit skeptical of this whole idea when it was announced. Because yes, we want everything to move faster, but there's always unintended consequences with these kinds of, you know, like really significant shifts in one direction on how stuff is supposed to go.
Hard to cover all the bases. Technical
too, right? Like these are a lot of the things that just have to be done. It's not like it's a policy thing, right?
No, it's just like literally you need to know that the building can be serviced before you build it. Yeah. Everybody wants that. The builder, the city,
everybody
the people living there.
Why can't we do it though? Like, what, does water not flow anymore between November and April? What the hell is this thing? Anyways, the point is that it should be like, you know what, we're going to accept your application. And when this thing is allowed to happen, like, you know, add it in. It shouldn't slow the process down, should it?
Well, I mean, you could do it. You just put a holding provision on your bylaw. And so the city will likely move stuff forward. And then you just lift the holding provision after you get the hydrant flow test done. So that's one way to deal with it. And that's what I think people might ultimately do. Mm-hmm. And the city is working. They were trying to get usually with a hold, you have to go to council and get council to lift the hold. And there's a process with that, which is, it's way too, shouldn't be the process. So under the Planning Act, the city at the staff level can remove the hold. You can, the chief planner can do it. They just need authority to do it. So council has to agree to that. So council could do themselves and everybody else a favor by never having to look at holding provisions again and just delegate it to staff. And they should totally do that. There's other stuff they can delegate to staff too. You know, whether it's minor zoning amendments or things that, like, you know, the problem is you get into these processes and then if there's a lot of public input around things that are very technical. And it's one of the reasons why you don't have a public process for a holding provision. You know, like you were talking about earlier, and you get comments from people on what the building is going to look like, and you got neighbors that are upset and everything else. And I think, you know, there's certain things that we really shouldn't need to consult on because they don't add any value to the process. And ultimately, it's tokenism. Like if you go out to people and say, hey, you know, this new building is getting built and it's 6 stories and it's in an area where the city wants to see 6-story buildings. What do you think of the building? Is it too tall? You know, why ask that question? Because the answer is it doesn't matter. You know, it's going to be 6 stories. So it just, you know, then people get frustrated with the process on both sides because it takes too long and people don't feel listened to. So I think we got to be much more transparent, like you said, about what can happen, where it can happen, and let it happen as of right. And then work through some of these technical issues like the hydrant flow test. And then there'll be just less brain damage for everybody involved.
Are the planners back at their offices now, or are they still working from home?
It's a mix. It's hybrid. So it's, you know, they generally go in on committee days and I think they go in 3 times a week. So that's what I've heard anyway.
So do you feel like they're like, and what's the situation with the job market with planners? Like, are they understaffed still, like the City of Toronto Planning Department?
They're hiring tons of people. And they had to, because they were kind of behind, they had a big shortfall of staff. And it's, yeah, like they're hiring a lot of people. Because
that's a simple solution, right?
As well. And it was, so there's a lot of planning applicants. It's hard to find people with experience, but I mean, I'm sure that's the case in every industry. So,
yeah, because I imagine that's the one solution where if they were saying, like Daryl was saying, oh, they really want to, you know, make things work. And you're saying, well, they really don't want to lose those fees if they take too long to approve the application. Well, then they should be at the office working. And they should be doing the things that are necessary by hiring more people, right?
It's like, not them. Like, they are a different they that care about, you know, the money not coming in, right? It's the planner at the city level, like the person reviewing the application, they don't really care if that money comes. They're not thinking, shit,
but
I won't have my money.
Hiring new people does. And so they should be hiring more people to ensure, right? So there's no delays, right? So that's what I want to see as a constituent. It's like, yeah, okay. Not only are you saying you're doing things, but you're actually taking action and spending the money and adding. Like the federal government's giving up some land in order for people to build on. They want to have like 30,000 homes or something like that built over the next, whatever it is, 7-8 years. So like, this is all political stuff, but it shows like, okay, you're actually trying to, you know, build more houses. And so City of Toronto with their policies is obviously a good way. It's a good start, but we want to see other things too. We want to see like there's more planners. They've hired more planners. They've maybe, I don't know if they need more meetings, if there needs to be more like frequent meetings for committee of adjustment, whatever it is.
The committee, the committee backlog is actually, committee's pretty short right now. I'm getting meetings in like, you know, 5 to 6 weeks from applying, which is like way better than it used to be. So yeah, that's a good thing. That's, I think it's just the volume is a bit down. But I, on the, you know, on the planners being in the office doing the stuff or not, like nobody wants to wear a refund, right? Like if your application doesn't, you know, get across the finish line, if it's, you know, something that you could have otherwise avoided, nobody wants to wear that. And so, because I mean, the reality is a lot of the application fees pay for the budget for city planning. So overall as a division, I don't think anybody wants to have to refund stuff. And honestly, most of the applicants I deal with, they don't care about the refund either. They'd rather everybody was just kind of working together. And if the approval takes a month longer, then so what? But there's this like kind of, you know, really hard deadline that it's, you know, challenging to deal with. And so choices have to get made. And if there's more staff, well, like that helps. The city's trying to do that right now. But I spent 2.5 years when I was at the city working almost entirely remote. I probably got more done remote than I did. Yeah, I'm a big fan of remote work. Like that's all.
When I said that out loud, I didn't mean to say that you need.
I know.
At the office, but somebody needs to be at the office.
I just wanted to get the empty office empty because I love it. It's great. So and it doesn't work for everybody, but
a couple days home, couple days at the office. So there's a cycle. So when you go there and you want an answer, you get an answer. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it really should be simple. It just seems like it really just could be super simple. And I don't know why everybody feels like they have the right to have feedback on somebody else's property. It's like, if you don't like what's going on, you have your options too. You have your choices. If you decide to learn like the rules after you've purchased something in the area or the rules change, it's like, sorry, like this is just how it is all over the place with everything. It's not just with housing, and it's not, I don't care if it's me that builds it or somebody else that builds it, but like somebody has to build it. And we see like leaving it up to the government to build. What did we get? 4 houses in the last 8 years or something? What was that report? Did you see that? Four houses were built. I'm sure that's a headline, but like the point is like there's more houses burning on fire right now than they are getting added to inventory from any government policies, right? Which is crazy.
Wasn't the community consultation part change? Wasn't that, didn't they restrict how much consultation? Wasn't that part of the province's agenda? Or did that never,
it was in the policy that you weren't going to have the same rights, but that never ended up getting pushed into law. This is still like a framework idea. No,
well, the idea is that if stuff happens on an as of right basis, then there's no consultation needed for stuff that comes in as of right. Like if you have permission to do a 6-story building or an 8-story building and that's what you apply for and you don't need any relief from the bylaw, then there's no consultation. That you just go through a technical process and you build your building. But one of the things that did change was the third party appeals for variances. So the way, like if you wanted to build a garden suite or a laneway suite and you needed some variances and you got approved at the committee because your proposal was good and met the 4 tests and everything else, then your neighbors could appeal you on whatever.
That's what it was. That's what
And so that is no longer a thing. So it's great because when I get something approved at the committee, I get to tell my client, you're good. So no, you don't have to worry about an appeal, you know. But if you get denied, then you get the opportunity to appeal.
Yeah.
So we've done that, and it's worked out thankfully. But
the city can take the developer to TLAB after the committee approval, or no?
Well, the city could if they wanted. There's only a few people that are allowed to appeal a positive decision from the committee, and the city is one of those agencies. But generally, they don't. Like there's, you know, kind of a waste of time for them, unless the committee makes a, you know, absurd decision. Like if they allowed a residential tower in an employment designation, you know, despite the request of city planning, if they just did that, I'm sure the city would appeal the decision.
The city can appeal the appeal.
Technically you can kick it up to the next level. You can get a review of a D-Lab decision done, but it happens rarely. And if you an OLT decisions, like, very rarely get bumped up to, I think it's divisional court, if somebody wants to do that. And I've never seen that really turn into anything. So usually
So if anybody's ever been to the fair and they've played that game where you got to shoot at that duck that goes back and forth across the screen and you got to try and hit it as it's moving, this is what it's like to be a developer in the city of Toronto, because it's like a moving target that's always changing. And yep. I mean, it's even harder because those are kind of, you can predict where they're going to be because there's, you know, consistent, but you know, all of a sudden you got all these 30-year-olds that replaced a bunch of 60-year-olds, and all, you know, like, now it's like a different lens, right? It's a different perception. So now it's like they're perceiving things a little differently than the last group, and we don't know how they're going to perceive things. And it's mixed with all this new policy. It's like all this happening at the same time. It seems like it could be good, but it's a fucking disaster. It's a wild west right now, no?
But how refreshing was that meeting with site, right?
It's so beautiful. It was like, it's crazy. It's almost like too good to be true. And then it's like, flow test. Oh my God, the flow test.
With that site, you know, to do the building that you want to do, everybody would have been getting a no, you know,
sure,
for years and years and years, which is why nothing happened on that site. And then so, you know, we went in, we all looked at it differently. City staff looked at it differently. And we all, in that meeting, there was a real sense of, hey, let's work together and get this done. Let's figure this out, because we don't want it to sit there for another 20 years. And it's that's a great mindset to have. And to be honest, I'm seeing that on a lot of projects. When we go in and I think, this might be a little aggressive, and I'm surprised by how open staff are to, you know, going down that road. Like, yeah, okay, it's a little taller than we might like, but you know what? Let's figure it out.
Yeah, and what the fuck? Yeah. Just, you're going to have to wait a year for a flow test. So it doesn't even matter what happens right now. No, but that's the thing. And that's what I was saying, is it's like they want to, and there's like this appearance of, but then there's all this stuff, these crazy hurdles and hoops and things you got to jump and dive through to get across the finish line. Even if they're super welcoming and gracious at the beginning, as you walk in the door, people are stabbing you and shooting you with crossbows or God knows what, all over the place, and things come up and new policies get made. Believe me, like, I've been doing this for a while, and to, you know, from the last project to this one, to have this new $40,000 item that I have to do for an application, like, that changes things by it's significant. And if your budget's already off because of all the other stupid shit that they've added to it, and now if I have to wait 4, 5, 6 months because of nothing, like, that, those months cost a lot of fucking money to just sit around, right? And so these are things that, like, get baked into the stew of this property or this project that don't have to be there. And there's like layer upon layer upon layer. And maybe this is not the area where you can all of a sudden say, hey, if we didn't do that, we could have, like, given away 2 free units to the homeless or something, right? Because it's like all these stupid things you got to spend money on, or wait for what? What am I waiting for right now? Right.
I would love somebody to put that on the table in a meeting. You know, we will literally give away 2 units to on a development that size.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder how they react to that.
Well, but it's in place of, like,
to the table.
But
first,
it's to not wait for an extra 9 months. But like on a project, like, let's say that has 200-300 units, right? To wait 6 months for no fucking reason at all. I mean, imagine how much that costs in interest payments. Okay.
Well, then you
push
get
you into a
trading.
Renewal, and then you've got all these extra fees, and those fees add up to another unit. Like, people just don't realize all these stupid little delays and all these like little add-ons and things. It's like it's holding up units on the market, and it's making the price for everybody higher. Everybody's unit goes up $2 a square foot. Everybody's unit goes up $4 a square foot. And like over time and space, that becomes really much bigger than necessary. It's like stupid. And that's why we have to get 1700 downtown, because there's all this stupid shit that takes forever and you don't start construction for 7 years, right? And on a $40-80 million site, to wait for 7 years before construction, imagine how much interest is paid. It's crazy.
Yeah,
give me the rules, man. Let me, everybody know that I can do up to 60 stories and it has to be within this frame. Done.
Well, you know, the province talked a big game after they were elected last time, but we're going to open it up. We're going to let everybody build housing. We're going to get out of the way. So get out of the way.
Get, you know, they the haven't fuck done out that of the yet. Way, man.
It's very, very easy things. They got this task force report that they commissioned that they could do a ton of stuff in there. Not all of it's good. Some of it's a bit ridiculous.
How many units could we have made without that commission? How much did that commission cost that we didn't do anything with that could have been like, white, right? Like there's all these things that are just getting pushed to these weird, stupid places that cost everybody. Everybody at some point pays for this shit as a collective for nothing, right? And like kids, my daughter is trying to find a home and it's fucking impossible. It's like not even fair if you're starting now. And this is not fixing things, right? For a while, right? And so if
it takes a while for this stuff to work its way through the system. I got kids. I think about what are they going to do when, you know, when I was moving out, when I was going to university and living and, you know, getting my first job, having an apartment, how in the world would I be able to afford that kind of place on the salary that I was making or even what it would be now for the same job today? It's crazy out there.
It's insane. It's so crazy. And so what does that do? Because I'm telling you, like I don't care what anybody says. We have 18,000 units that are available right now. It's going to be 25 or whatever. And there's all these, you know, at some point things will normalize and we're going to be so short again. And like all these first time homeowners, like they want to own something, don't they? They want to buy something. They don't want to rent. They're programmed to want to buy.
Well, that's because in Toronto, we underbuilt on the province. We underbuilt rental housing for so long that a lot of the rental stock is dated, or it isn't set up in buildings that have some of the amenities that families would want, or it's not in those areas. Or if it is in the areas that people want, it's in low rise buildings where the rent control doesn't, you know, like if you're in a 6-unit building, you know, you're golden, but if you're not, then you could get rent evicted just about any time. And people don't want to live with that over their head. Like when I went to Frankfurt a few years ago with my wife for there's a thing she was doing over there, and we stayed we visited some friends over there, and they live in this building. It's a 6-story building and there's one unit on every floor, and they have a 25-year lease in that building, and they live there with their kids, and they know that they're totally fine for 25 years. Like they're not going anywhere. They improved the place, they renovated it, all the kids play in the backyard. You know, we had a party in the backyard there the night I got there. It's fantastic. And it's like, you know, just that's unthinkable in Toronto, in Ontario, in the way that we've set up the Residential Tenancies Act and the way that people deal with residential leasing and, you know, the precariousness of being a renter in this city. And it just, there's other places that do it far better. And as Toronto, I think, gets more expensive over time and moves more toward a renter's economy, then somebody's going to have to figure out how to create a much better environment for people in those situations, or else it's a drain on the economy. I mean, housing is the fuel for the local economy. If people can't afford to live here, if they have to drive 2 hours to get to their job, then they're not going to do that for too long. And they're certainly not going to, you know, invest in their area. They're certainly not going to try and start a business. If housing costs are prohibitively expensive, then it saps energy from everything else. And it's, you know, if that resolves itself, then, you know, the long-term prosperity of the country looks a lot brighter. I think.
I think like every other market, it resolves itself. I know we all want to fix. We all want to try to fix the market and build more and drive prices in one direction or the next. But at the end of the day, like, nothing sustains for that long without going back to where it needs to be. Eventually, if everybody can't afford to live here, then there won't be anybody who want to be here, which means that there won't be anybody to hire, and then prices will have to come down. Like, you know, yeah. I don't want my, the house, like, the value of my home to go down. But at the end of the day, you know, if we don't find a solution, then that's what will happen. And they'll just, yeah, nobody will ultimately be paying
these. If you don't have anybody that can afford to live near their job, if they're, you know, selling coffee and going to school, or if they're working a bar, if they're, you know,
they're new to the country,
if they're a musician, or, you know, if they're contributing to arts and culture or the retail space or whatever else, that stuff dies in the city and it becomes a boring place to be. And
exactly.
Who wants to live
there? We won't have that problem. I know that's our fear. We won't have that problem. Something will fix itself. It's just, it's not on the timeline that we all want it to be. The market's bigger than all of us.
I like the optimism.
100%. In every situation, it always has. These conversations were had many years ago in many cities about what we're dealing with and growth and costs and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And solutions always come up and people's expectations change and they start making accommodations for everyone to live in the city no matter what.
These empty office buildings, though, put a little ding in that, like, plan, right? Because you're building all the density near all these offices, and now the offices are becoming less relevant to a lot of people. And, you know, I saw Foch, I think, put a video out of people saying, like, enough is enough with saying it's really hard to convert offices to residential. Like, you know what else is hard? Converting dirt to residential and converting, you know, whatever to residential. So, like, enough is enough. But I think, like, the values of those offices have to come down considerably more in order for somebody and something to be worth going through that conversion headache, because it's a real nightmare to change these spaces, you know, from these big, huge, open, you know, floor plates to these little chopped up, plumbed and ventilated separately, and, you know, electrical separate. Like, it's a real fucking job to convert these things. But like, is there policy that gets in the way and makes it far more costly to convert those? Or I think it's just a construction issue.
I think it's primarily a construction issue. Though the city is looking at reviewing its office replacement policies right now, because they have right now, if you go into the city and you say, I want to convert this office building or take this office building down and build a tower, then they expect you to replace the office space to a certain degree. And it used, in certain parts of the city, there's policy that say it's 100% replacement. And so the city usually fights for that, and sometimes they win and sometimes they don't. And I think they're taking another look at that in light of what's happened in the last few years. And so they'll probably be an easier policy environment for conversions in the future. But I think you got to have the long view about it too, because what happens when you get rid of that employment space and you turn it to residential? It's never going to go back. It's very unlikely to go back to employment space. And who knows where we're going to be in 20 years. You know, where's the office?
Working from home.
But residential has turned into office space, right?
Yeah, like,
residential, your house is now your office for a lot of the populace, right?
Mm-hmm. And I like that, because I think it decentralizes things in Toronto in a way that actually really benefit the city in the long term. And I might have talked to you about this in the past, but I think the city's hyper focus on the downtown as the economic engine of the city has been sort of a drag, I think, on it, looking at other opportunities that are very well connected with transit. You look at Bloor and Dundas West. You look at Kennedy Station in Scarborough. You look at those are a couple areas that are almost as well connected as Union Station to transit. They're on regional rail, they're on local rail, they've got, you know, streetcar surface transit networks, and there's a bunch of parks and community facilities and everything else in those areas. And we should be densifying those areas like crazy and building new employment spaces in there, building a bunch of new housing as well, just so you don't have everybody in the geography of the city trying to rush downtown over 2 hours of the morning and then leave over 2 hours in the evening. It's just not an efficient way to use the city's transportation infrastructure or anything else. And ultimately, I think you create a more interesting, varied city across the whole geography, not just one area where you're focusing all the growth.
Greg, that is going to be one of our clips for our Clips channel. That was a great way to end the show today.
Yeah, we're going to do that.
Final topic of, you know, future planning for the city of Toronto. Not so downtown centric, but we always appreciate you coming on. you're gonna be back. I'm sorry to tell you. You know, we're gonna have to invite you again. Yeah.
I always enjoy this.
You know,
hey,
I hope some planners are listening from the city from time to time, because I'm telling you, listen, if people can get through the nonsense of this show, there's a lot of real good stuff in here. And if, listen, both sides have to talk, there has to be a dialogue. It can't be just one side making all the stuff up and not taking in any feedback and, like, you know, stuck in this weird loop that doesn't work or spits out situations that maybe with a little bit of feedback you could have, you know, thought about or a little more or dealt with, right? Well, yeah. There needs to be a dialogue out there, hopefully. Yeah, because listen, I've changed my opinion over time by having dialogue with the other side, right? It's not us against them. It has to be us.
Well, nobody, as a planner, nobody gets into planning to say no to shit all the time. Like, I want to work with people who have good ideas. I want to help them through the process and influence it in ways that I think are good. And I want to help collaborate and build cool shit in Toronto. I want this city to, you know, be a great city for my kids when they grow up. And, you know, the way, you know, I love living in this city, I want it to continue to do that for people. And you don't do that if you say no to everything.
So you get this when you say no to everything. This is where we're at, a whole bunch of no's over time. No to this, no to that. No, you got to do this. No, you got to do that. No, throw this angle on. No, keep that heritage component. Right now,
Greg can help us today with our like, comment, and subscribe.
Yeah, we got to do this because I got to go.
Yeah, if you can, that's okay.
Wait, so all right, like, comment, and subscribe, ring the bell. There's a bell, isn't there?
That's it. There you go.
Perfect. That's all we needed.
One shot, baby.
Thanks, guys.
No, thanks, Greg. Yeah, I got to run too, but
always, not that good. Talking to you guys. Always fun.
Good.
Always a pleasure, Greg. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys.
TK.